5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
When I see my baby, what do I see? Poetry, poetry in motion. She doesn't need improvement. She's much too nice to rearrange. Poetry in motion, dancing close to me. A flower of devotion, a swaying gracefully.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, good evening. It is the new Panic Room episode 267, would you believe, on the 10th of March 2022, or year three in the after times. As we like to call it. It's been a week, so hopefully everybody out there's all rather jolly and whatnot, and doing whatever it is. I cannot believe it's almost the middle of March already. It'll be Christmas soon, you mark my words, but it's just all going on, and I have missed her this week, and that song, obviously Poetry in Motion, couldn't be more apt for my for the old mate Extina. evening, Stina. How are you?
Woo! Yeah,
woo,
I'm here.
Woo!
Know,
don't sound too enthusiastic. Well, woo.
I know. No, you're right. It's been a week,
and it has.
Still here. They're coming faster and faster. So it's like a blur. I'm not sure exactly where the week went. But, you know, I can't complain. Although the weather, you know, we had a couple of days, maybe even longer, which is beautiful weather. I mean, I could see the flowers starting to bloom, and it was just gorgeous, and I was so excited. And I think we got a winter weather advisory for this weekend or something.
Oh, wow. Well, this is Texas. We've had it literally within the space of a day. I've had the heating on, and then the air conditioning on, and then the back door open because it's nice, and then close the back door because it's raining, and it's literally all within one day. You know, I let all the dogs out, and it was sunny, and like 10 minutes later, I hear them at the door, wanted to come in, and they're all dripping wet, and it was obviously peeing it down, and I felt awful. And they look at you like you know, right? We're gonna ring animal cruelty people now. We're gonna dob you in, you bastard. Yeah, but it's been very strange the weather, but we're used to it. I'm tired. It has been a tiring week.
Yeah,
I have to say. And there's nothing more draining, I find, than stupid people. And if there's any stupid people listening tonight, you know, sorry for any offence I cause. But, you know, maybe since I'm getting older, I'm just getting less and less tolerance for, you know, my level is just dropped. You know, and of course, all over social media, everybody's complaining, oh, the price of gas has gone up. And, you know, I mean, it's funny, I put half a tank in my car yesterday, $30, whereas like a week and a half ago, that would have filled the car. But, you know, somebody put a great little meme on there, you know, on the, I think it was that, you know, okay, gas has gone up, but at least you're not huddled in a, you know, subway train station cuddling your cat, wondering if your house has been blown up, you know. And then there's people saying, obviously, all the experts who 3 weeks ago were experts on COVID and epidemiology are now experts on Eastern European matters. People who, and I will guarantee it, couldn't stick a fucking pin in a map as to where the Ukraine is or was, you know, never heard of it. You know, they're fucking experts. And oh, it's nothing to do with the war. It's the fat cats in, you know, the oil companies and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, my reply is so fucking what? You know, if that is all you have to moan about, that it costs a little bit more to put gas in your car, fuck off. Seriously. Just get things in perspective. Look at what's going on. Stop moaning. This is my rant for the day. We need a jingle for this part. You know, Jimbo's rant for the day. I'm sick to death of people fucking moaning. Seriously, stop moaning. Yeah, you've got nothing to. You know, we live well. We live in a good country. You've got money. You've got all the support. You've got everything going on. You know, more subways than you know what where to eat. You know, but moaning. People, even, you know, spare a thought for the poor Russian soldiers. You know, they're showing clips online and on the newspapers of, the whooping and horror because they've blown up a Russian tank, you know, from a drone. Mm. And you spare a thought, you know, in that tank are people's sons and possibly, brothers, husbands, etc., fathers even. A lot of them, you know, that they're pushed into going there. Now, and here's, funnily enough, in context, I was speaking to a friend of mine whose ex-wife is Russian and her family are in Russia. And such is the propaganda machine in Russia that this girl's mother, she actually said, quote unquote, "I don't understand why Ukraine are attacking Russia." But then you get in the whole debate about propaganda itself, you know? How much of what we're being fed is propaganda?
Yes.
You know, we are being told... I mean, the propaganda machine has been going on as long as forever. I mean, I studied World War II when I was at school, and, you know, a big part of the war effort, they would drop leaflets saying Hitler only had one ball, and they killed the big general and all the rest of it. It's pretty much what they're saying now. We've killed all the generals, and the tanks are stuck in mud and all the rest. So it's interesting times. You have to take what you said with such a big pinch of salt.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I have on my friends list sides of the political, you know, thing going on here, and I see it's so divisive right now. But the weird thing is, oftentimes I see the same argument from both sides, but they're each blaming the other side, and I'm so confused by this. I see the whole the cancel culture. You know, the libs are saying it's all the conservatives are saying it's libs.
Of course they are.
And
yeah,
I'm in the middle.
Absolutely.
In the middle, yeah. Going, who is actually doing this? Who is actually? So I think there are these, you know, puppeteers that are, you know, pitting us against each other. And
it does make you think that. Yes, absolutely.
I honestly do. You know, especially when I see these arguments from these people and everybody is on, they're so divided, yet they're arguing the same freaking thing. And it sounds like they're on the same side, but they're each blaming the other one for the same exact thing. It's very, I definitely think there is a higher power out there who is just orchestrating everything. And we have to figure out why that's... I guess if we're divided, we're not as powerful.
Part of me, I think I'm maybe becoming a conspiracy theorist. I mean, you think about it that, that we've had COVID, you know, that's kept everybody indoors and kept us under control and kept us glued to the internet, to be fair, which is feeding us. If you've not seen The Social Dilemma, watch it. I believe it's on Netflix.
That was good. Yes,
that is not just feeding us stuff, it is telling us how to think. It is controlling how we think, yeah?
Yes.
So COVID, people getting fed up with it. It's wearing a bit thin now. So what do? Oh, let's put the gas prices up so people can't afford to go anywhere. So again, we're in front of our screens being fed propaganda, being fed information that may or may not be true. We don't know. Maybe balance, might not be balanced. Do we question everything that we read, everything that we see, because you just don't know what to. And I guess like these people have never read 1984, for fuck's sake, you know. How Orwell predicted it. This is what, you know, the manipulation of even of history, the manipulation of how we speak, the words we say, how we say them, you know, it's exactly, look at what's happening. You know, you can't say this, you can't say that, it'll offend somebody. Seriously, I'm going to sit and read 1984 again and make notes, because I will guarantee, we're pretty much there now.
I don't disagree at all. And I do think you have to be wary of every single thing you take in, every single thing you read. And the scary part is even things that we are seeing, it's so easy to manipulate things that, you're watching something and you're being told what you're seeing. And then you find out, oh, wait, that's not even real. So how do we find the truth? Like it's out there somewhere, but how do we go through all the pieces of information they're feeding us to the truth? And that is, that's where we're at right now. It's hard to know what to believe anymore. And then, of course, we're conspiracy theorists. We're not believing everything that we're told. When there's lies all the time. So
that's it. Just assume everything is false.
Interesting times.
Just assume everything is propaganda and rubbish, and then away we go.
Yeah.
That's probably the safest bet, to be honest, if you ask me. But anywho, what sort of show we got going on this evening?
I am excited. I say that every week, but I am. I'm always excited. So we have a great show tonight. The first guest we have of the evening, we have Amazon bestselling author Samantha Downing. She's agreed to come back, and I'm so excited to talk to her again. And then later on in the show, we'll have horror author and owner of Godless, Drew Stepick. So
awesome.
It's an action-packed show.
And
of course,
we have the lovely Samantha.
I noticed
on the write-up you've removed that. It's just some. Oh no, you've still got the lovely Samantha. You know, so we got two Samanthas for the price of one this evening. So that's exciting all in itself. So I think we're going to have to call Samantha Downing, Samantha One. I think so. I think you should introduce Samantha One.
All right, our first guest of the evening is Amazon bestselling author Samantha Downing. Woo!
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
How are you? Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
We enjoy our Thursday night rants, and they get longer as we go.
That's
on
okay.
With the after times.
Yeah. I have to say something here because I was an international studies major, so this period we're in right now is called the fog of war. We do not have accurate information. No one has accurate information because the battle is still being fought and cameras can't be everywhere. We don't have accurate information from either side. They might try to be accurate. They might not try to be accurate. They might try to propaganda on both sides, but this is the fog of war and we will not have accurate information until the battle has been fought.
I agree with that, and everybody has their own agenda. That's the thing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
All I know is the longer I spend not, and I will do this, especially, you know, we had the virus and, the, you know, all of that. And I know that I immersed myself in, you know, news and articles and anything I could read. And it did something to me. Like, it made me, I don't know if a paranoid is the right word, but I mean, it was awful. I had to take a step back and I was having nightmares, you know, and about apocalypses and which is actually kind of cool. The nightmare was, but, the longer I take a step back, that was an awful sentence I just said, but, if I stay away from the social media and stay away from the news, I'm so much happier. I think we should all do that more often. You know, whatever's going to happen, it's going to happen whether or not I'm watching the news 24/7. And, you know, when we do that, I think we just, it depresses. There's so much crap going on in the world right now that it's so easy to let it overwhelm you and just take a walk outside and look up at the sky and go, oh, it's beautiful out here. You know what I mean? Instead of, oh, God, what's happening today? And I do that every morning as I'm getting ready for the day. I have on news, and I should just stop doing it. I'm going to start playing music. That's it. Just music for me from now on.
That is a better idea, yes. Absolutely, yeah.
It is. And then, but, you know, just kind of like with that movie thing, James, the Social Dilemma, you know, you go so long without listening to the news or something, and then, oh, God, what have I missed? What have I missed since I've been gone? You know,
it is designed, and again, that is something that is touched on in the documentary or the movie. It is designed to be addictive. Our cell phones are designed to be addictive. The apps are designed to be addictive. The what they feed us is addictive. And I'm really trying very hard at the moment just to put my phone down, and you start feeling anxious. Unless me. Yeah.
turn off the notifications. The last when we do our shows on Thursday, I turn off the sound on mine. And I forgot to turn them back on this whole week. And you know what? It has been so quiet. I mean, you know, you still can check it, obviously. but you don't have that constant ping, ping, and all the different noises and stuff that make you
I did turn those off, and I did move my Facebook app to a different, not my main screen, and I turned off the notifications for that because that was just terrible. But even though, you know, I'll just find myself. And I don't know, is it just, or do you guys, either of you, just find yourself, you know, just picking the phone up and scrolling through it, just almost
all
unconsciously.
The time.
And then you're there,
yes,
and sort of 10
yes.
minutes has gone by, and you think, what the fuck am I doing? What am I looking at? And you look at, because it's designed that it's constantly refreshing. There's something new, something new, something new, something new. And the brain just wants that. And I need to try harder, but I'm really trying to, I mean, I can't do without it, because obviously for work and what have you, but just trying. It's not easy. I need help. I have a problem.
No, it's a serious problem, and I think especially for people who work from home, we have to try to get in the habit of, after like work hours or whatever, that you're not available every second, you know, you know what I mean? And I think that might be the hardest part. You know, I hear a ting or bing or whatever, I see a notification, and I feel like I have to respond right then. I'm like, well, why? Why do I? If this was anything else, you know, there's business hours and you attend to it the next day. But because we can see it so easily on our phone, we have this need to answer it right then. And
well, you know, it's funny, you know, speaking about in business, I come from the old days, business-wise, when, you know, you would write a letter to someone. You know, and you would wait, you know, 3 or 4 days for it to get there. Then they'd read it, 3 or 4 days for it to come back. So you're looking, you know, almost like 2 business weeks before you heard back. Now, you know, you send an email, and if you don't get a reply within a minute, it's what's up, what's wrong, and you check in, is my connection there? Did they get it? And then what do you do? Then what do you do? You phone them to say, did you get my email?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, seriously, this is where
it's
we
bad.
Are. It's just
so bad.
Crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think we all need to unplug for, you know, and the bad thing is the first day or so, it's really bad. You know, you feel like, oh my God, I have to check. But after you get past that first day, it's almost like a calm washes over you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We need to find some addictions programs just for the internet, and where they can confiscate
your
phone as you walk in.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, funny if my internet's been down most of today, and after the initial panic attack that I had, I found it was I was all right actually. That was okay.
Especially if there's nothing you can do about it but sit back and, you know, there's times you can't do anything. We could talk about this all day long. And you know what? We should set a time, you know, where we just moan for the entire show. That would be so much fun. Maybe not for our listeners, but it would be fun for us. But Samantha is here to talk to us about her book, For Your Own Good. And tell us a little bit about it, if we haven't bored you to tears, Samantha.
No, not at all. I just want to say, on my phone, I have very strict controls. It makes no sound unless it's actually ringing. And
I
shut off notifications for every single app. There are no notifications except text and email. So I do not get any notifications from social media on my phone. I have to actually open the app and check it to see it. And so I'm like really strict when it comes to that.
That's I like that. I may have to do that. I need to do something.
Seriously.
Mm.
It's gotten bad.
That's just my little rule. But there you go. I see. It's always funny when I see somebody's phone. They have like 87 notifications across the top, and like I don't get all of those. I turn them off on every single app, so I never see that. But that's just me. So anyway, it's because it's for your own good. You see that segue? It's for your own good.
I like
that.
That
was just fun. But the book has nothing to do with phones or social media. It is a thriller. I write thrillers, and they are satirical, and they are snarky, and they have some bad people doing very bad things. And For Your Own Good takes place in a private school where one of the teachers is a psychopath. So I'll call him a psychopath. And so he teaches very upscale, rich high school students, and he does not really like how snobby and horrible they are. And so that's sort of where it starts, and he doesn't know, or the parents or the teachers, and he has a pretty strong belief system that he's right and he knows exactly what he's doing, and everybody just needs to get out of his way and let him do it. And that is Teddy, who is one of the main characters of the book. So that's kind of what it's about in short form. And so the trials and tribulations of what he does at Belmont Academy, which is a fictional school in the Northeast.
Now, being that it's, you know, set in school and we got the, a private school, like how much of this is, you know, of course it's fiction, but as we've discussed on the show before, our own lives seep into so much of what we write. I guess, what was your inspiration? What was your inspiration for this book?
The first thing was the character of a teacher. I wanted to write about a teacher who was bad and not in the sexual predator way, which has been done a lot, but an actual psychopath, because they exist in all walks of life, and they are not all killers. They're not all serial killers, but there are psychopaths out there. So I thought it would be really interesting to see what a psychopathic teacher would do and how that would come out as a teacher, and how frightening it would be to imagine your kids being taught by a psychopath. So that's where I started with. As far as the school, I did not go to private schools, but I am from California. So I always sort of had this fascination with those back east schools, those old traditional, old world, like the children of the masters of the universe go to these schools, and it was always just sort of this thing I could hear about but didn't know about. So I decided to create one, a fictional one, and I have a writer's group. I live in New Orleans now, and I'm in a writer's group, and one of the women in it is a teacher, or used to be a teacher, so she did a lot of commenting on what I was getting right and what I was getting wrong as far as the politics behind the teachers and what they have to do in schools. And so that was a great help to me, because I am not a teacher. So that was it was a lot of fun. So I think mostly where I personally come in is with the students, where I was drawing on my own high school experience. And I think that high school in general, whether you went to a private high school or a public high school, is something we all have in common. We all have some form of a high school experience, and maybe are seeing our kids now go through high school. So the things that you learn and the growth that you go through when these kids in my book are all 17 years old, when you're on the cusp of going off to college or at least becoming 18 and becoming a legal adult, you're far more developed than as a human being than you are at an earlier age. And so it was fun to write them and how clever they are now and how much they figure out about the adults in their life.
I like it. I definitely want to hear more. Do we have an excerpt to read tonight?
Yeah, I was going to read a little bit of the beginning. It's kind of hard to jump in the middle, so I thought the beginning is the best place to start. And I won't read the whole first chapter, but I'll read a little bit of it.
Okay.
So, chapter one. Entitlement has a particular stench. Pungent, bitter, almost Teddy smells it coming. The stench blows in the door with James Ward. It oozes out of his pores, infecting his suit, his polished shoes, his ridiculously white teeth. I apologize for being late, James says. It's fine, Teddy says. Not all of us can be punctual. The smile on James's face disappears. Sometimes it can't be helped. Of course. James sits at one of the student desks. Normally, Teddy would sit right next to a parent, but this time he sits at his own desk in the front of the class. His chair is angled slightly, giving James a clear view of the award hanging on the wall. Teddy's Teacher of the Year plaque came in last week. You said you wanted to talk about Zach, Teddy says. I want to discuss his midterm paper. Zach's paper sits on Teddy's desk. Daisy Buchanan from The Great Gatsby, Was She Worth It? Along with Teddy's rubric assessment. He glances at James, whose expression doesn't change. An interesting topic. You gave him a B+. Yes, I did. James smiles just enough. Teddy. Not Mr. Crutcher, as everyone calls him, and not Theodore. Just Teddy, like they are friends. You know how important junior year grades are for college. I do. Zach is a straight-A student. I understand that. I've read his paper. I thought it was well-written, and it showed a great deal of creativity. Zach worked very hard to come up with a topic that hadn't been done before. He really wanted to a different perspective on a book that's been written about ad infinitum. Ad infinitum. The words hang in the air, swinging like a pendulum. All true, Teddy says, but you still gave him a B+. Zach wrote a good paper and good papers get a B, get exceptional papers get an A. The rubric and holds it out towards James. You can see the breakdown for yourself. Grammar, structure, mechanics, it's all here. James has to get up to retrieve the paper, which makes Teddy smile inside. He folds his hands and watches. As James starts to read, his phone buzzes. He takes it out and holds up a finger, telling Teddy to wait, and then gets up and walks out of the classroom to take the call. Teddy is left alone to think about his time, which is being wasted. James asked for this meeting. James specified that it had to be after hours in the evening. This is what Teddy has to deal with from parents, and he deals with it ad infinitum. He stares at his own phone, counting the minutes as they pass, wondering what James would do if he just got up, walked right past him, and left. 11 minutes go by before James walks back into the room. I apologize. I was waiting for that call. It's fine, Teddy says. Some people just can't disconnect. Sometimes it's not possible. Of course. James takes his seat and says, let me ask you straight out. Is there anything we can do about Zach's paper? When you say do, Mr. Ward, are you asking me if I will change his grade? Well, I thought it was an A paper. A- maybe, but still an A. I understand that, and I understand your concern for Zach and his future, Teddy says. However, can you imagine what would happen if I changed his grade? Can you appreciate how unfair that would be, not only to the other students, but also to the school? If we start basing our grades on what parents think they should be instead of teachers, how can we possibly know if we are doing our job? We couldn't possibly know if our students were learning the material and progressing with their education. And that, Mr. Ward, is the very foundation of Belmont. Teddy pauses, taking great joy at the dismayed look on James's face. Not so arrogant now. So no, I will not change your son's grade and threaten the integrity of this school. I'll just stop there.
Oh, so you just gave us a little, just a little tease. That was a tease. No, I loved it. It did remind me, although I did, she was not an evil teacher, even though, you know, she was mean to me. when I was in, I think it was like 10th or 11th grade, I had this English teacher, and English, of course, was always my favorite subject because I love to read and write as well. And I turned in this paper. Well, let me say there was a guy in school with me that was a senior, and he was just, I think he'd been hit in the head too many times by the football. He was a jock, and we just, you know, he wasn't the brightest, but he was, you know, a good football player. So he's in my class, and we turn in this paper. Of course, mine, you know, did I try really hard? You know, probably not. But was it still a good paper? Yes. I got a C, and he got an A, and I was beside myself. I went up to this teacher, and I'm like, how? You know, I'm like, my paper was so much better than his. And she was like, you know, he tried as hard as he could. You didn't. And I was like, ouch. I mean, okay, it's. She was right.
She's wrong. No, that's wrong. Seriously, it's not. Yeah, okay. He tried really hard, and it's, you know, no, it's about what you got right. You know, so no, she should have been fired for that, in my opinion. You know, it's not about. I mean, I'm speaking as someone who half-assed his way through school mostly. sort of, you know, minimum effort for maximum result was me.
Yeah.
So had they applied that to me, I'd still be doing high school, I think, to be honest.
Well, it did make me try harder with the next paper. And, you know, she was right that I didn't try very hard. And that's definitely very true. I mean, I could have done better. And I guess maybe that was the point. But, yeah, I mean, I was like, are you kidding me? He got an A, which, yeah, he probably shouldn't have. He should have got the C. But I should have gotten a C as well for, you know, my crappy paper. I mean,
that's one of the things in the olden days, they used to give you, you know, the grade, then a grade for effort.
Right.
That would have been fair. You know, give you the A, but like a D for effort because you half-assed it. That would have been
fair. Right.
But hey, what do I know? This is why I'm not a teacher, to be honest.
Right.
This is why I would be crap at it.
So, Samantha, what are you working on now?
I'm working on my fourth a thriller that will be out in 2023. I also have on Tuesday, I wrote a novella, which is not a book and not a short story, somewhere in between, called Sleeping Dogs Lie, and the ebook of that comes out on this coming Tuesday. So it's about, awesome. It's about a quarter of the length of one of my books, and that is about a dog walker who finds one of her clients dead, not the dog, the owner.
Thank goodness for that. Dead people, not a problem. You know, leave the puppies alone.
Yeah, exactly. The nothing bad happens to animals in the book. So there are no animals are killed. And For Your Own Good, actually one of the Bookstagrammers did a review of it and described it. I loved the description of it. If you ever saw the movie Election, I don't know if anybody saw that old movie with Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon when she played the, I don't know if anybody saw that, but he said it was like Election with murder. So I love that movie.
Oh, cool.
So,
yeah, cool.
In terms of saying murder, you have James's attention. Murder?
I know, yeah, you've got me.
Oh, there's lots of murders in all my books. There's never just one. There has to be more.
Oh, good. True. Yeah, funny enough, actually, I know I'm late to the party, but I've been binge-watching Hannibal. Because a lot of people say, got to watch it. And I have to say, I mean, it's set around sort of Baltimore. There's a lot of serial killing going on around Baltimore. It's not all Hannibal, neither. It must be like a hot spot. All the serial killers, let's go to Baltimore and kill them. I'm surprised there's anybody left, to be honest with you, in Baltimore. It's just getting a little bit ridiculous. I'm near the end of the first season, and it's a little bit ridiculous now. Because it's all about Hannibal and his relationship with Will Graham, but it's, of course, they have this backdrop of these murders that they've got to... But it's like, here's a murder, it's gruesome, and special effect, and then they sort of wrap it up nicely at the end. I actually watched one, the one I watched last night, they revealed who, I don't know where they got that from. Why him? just threw this character in the last 5 minutes, how he did it. And it's like, what?
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to say that we have Samantha Hawkins, our reviewer, who is, I think she wanted to say a few things or ask a few questions to Samantha. Oh. So I think we're going to bring her on. And let's hope she's called in because I haven't even asked James. Has she called in yet?
I don't know. Have you called in yet, Samantha? She has, yes.
There she is.
To answer your question, yes, Xtina, she has called in.
Yay!
Because I'm here.
Are you calling us on your...
I'm using my AirPods, and I was really afraid they weren't going to connect, so I'm glad that you guys could hear me. I was like, watch my video, but I'm very
We can hear you.
No, I think I mostly wanted to know where Samantha gets her inspiration from, because her books are so amazing.
Thank you. It really can come from anything. I mean, the inspiration, like I said, for this book was wanting to write about a bad teacher. And I thought that would just be really scary. My first book was called My Lovely Wife, which was about a couple who were serial killers. And a lot of people said that it made them scared of their neighbors. Like, what are their neighbors doing behind closed doors that they don't know about? And what if they're serial killers? Go ahead.
I love My Lovely Wife. It was so awesome.
Thank you so much. So I kind of was thinking what would be really scary to in an everyday life kind of a way, and the place kids spend the most amount of time other than home is at school, and how scary it would be if you had a teacher that was that ruthless.
That's a very good premise. I think Teddy is one of my favorite characters out of just, like, you know, books in general. I always think back to him in that last line of the book because it made me laugh out loud, and I was like, oh, that's funny. Like, what a good ending to this book.
Thank you. I like that idea. I love dark humor. It's my favorite thing. I love when something can make you laugh at something that you really shouldn't be laughing at. Like, it shouldn't be funny, but somehow it is. And I think it's a real...
He says these most people wrong, so it's like a kind of couple at it.
I'm sorry, cutting out. Can you say it again?
Oh, like cutting. I think that was the best part about this character. He says that, like, hateful and wrong things, so he says it, he can't help but almost chuckle when he says it. Because he's so funny.
Oh, right,
like
right.
That. He's
right.
Very funny. I love what he said.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have to say I love dark humor as well, the kind of stuff that you laugh and then you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to hell for laughing at this. But it is the best kind, I think, of laughter.
It is. And I saw a lot of people, I have seen reviews that where people say they feel really guilty reading my books. They're like, oh my God, I should not be enjoying this, and now I feel guilty. So that's the kind of books they are. That is interesting. They don't make me feel guilty to write them.
And I did love that you said that, you know, that it made people uncomfortable about their neighbors, and then you know, you're writing about a bad teacher. And I do, you know, for myself, when I'm going to read a horror or thriller, I love that it's just people, you know, because I think that we are scary as hell, you know what I mean? You know, instead of like you having a monster at the end of the story or something like that, it is just a person or people. And what a person can do, what people can do I guess it should frighten all of us. And I am just a trusting person. We went out to dinner with friends last night, and she insisted on sitting so she was facing the door. She's like, you know, I have to see who's coming in and out. And I'm thinking, wow, is that cynical? Because, I mean, personally, I don't think these things. I'm just, like, in my own little world all the time. And I figure if something ever is going to happen to me, at least I'm unaware it's happening. I mean, it's just going to be fast and it's going to be over with. And I'm okay.
You don't
want to
see it coming.
Exactly.
That's funny.
Well, I think we are just about out of time for our first segment. Samantha, both Samanthas. I enjoyed having you both on. Well, Samantha Downing, give us a plug real quick where we can find you online.
Yes, I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook with the same name, S. Marie Downing. And those are all linked on my website, SamanthaDowning.com. I will also say, because this just happened yesterday, if anybody is interested in getting For Your Own Good, for only four more days, it is the ebook is on sale for $5.99. All major retailers is on sale. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever you buy your books, the ebook is on sale, but only for like 4 days.
Awesome. For everybody out there listening, go to Amazon and buy For Your Own Good by Samantha Downing. And I can't wait to have you back to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's always
fun. Have a great rest of your evening.
You too. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Night.
Bye.
So it has, yeah. Time has beaten us. Time for another box of wine, I think, Expina.
Woohoo!
Yay, more wine. Okay, and we'll be right back.
Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Extina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Extina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Stop! Welcome back to part two.
Hello! Hi, Xena. How are you? We're back. We're back, we're back, we're back.
I'm here. Yay!
She's in body, if not spirit. You know, it's... I know, it's getting a bit late. I mean, I always forget. It's like, because it's sort of, you're an hour ahead of me, so you're way, way past your bedtime. way past my bedtime, to be honest.
I actually had a nap today, so. Yeah, I did. I had a nap, and, you know, we don't usually go to bed till about, you know, one is usually when we start, and, you know, getting ready for bedtime, and, but we don't get up as crazy early as you either. You're up at like, what, 6 or something? I mean, that's the middle of the night. That's the middle of the night for me. So, yeah, I mean, if I do get up to, you know, for whatever reason at 6 in the morning, I'm looking around like, are you kidding me? People get up this, you know, it's just awful.
Yeah, so. this should be made illegal. Definitely. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, but between the kids and the dogs, I mean, it's because, you know, I don't know, I suppose it sort of works in a vicious circle, because I get up to get my daughter to school and everything, and then obviously because the puppies are used to me getting up at that time, you know, they get up at that time, so, you know, if it's, you know, if the weekends or holiday or whatever, the kid's not around, the puppies are up at 6, so either way, I'm up. I have no choice.
You know, our dogs are so trained to our schedule that, you know, on the times that we've had to be up for whatever time, you know, 8 o'clock or something, 9 o'clock, they will be in their cages and we'll go to like open them up for the dogs and they'll just look at us like, it's still bedtime. I don't know what you're smoking, but we're still sleeping.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
They're tired and. Yeah, and our one dog, Daisy, she actually burrows underneath the cover. So she's covered up, like, you know. Like,
they can't find
it's the cutest thing. She's the only one who does it. The other ones just lay right on their blankets. But she's, you know, it's bedtime. She's going to cover up, and she's not coming out until it's, you know, 10:30.
It's funny how my daughter's pit bull, she sleeps with my daughter. She sleeps, you know, some mornings she's under the bed. And it's like, it takes some getting her up. It's like, you know, I think I have to coax her out. And when she's been out, and if it's a bit cold out or raining and that, if she's been, because the other dogs love going out, and if it's a bit cold, I'll open the door. And she'll actually just sit down. She stood there. She'll just sit and look at you like, what? Are you going out?
Yeah, I'm not going out there.
No, I'm not going out. I'm good. And to be fair, she's good. She doesn't then go in the house, you know. She just looks at you like, I'm not going out in that. And to be fair, I don't blame her.
Right,
but the others, no matter what the weather, they just enjoy being out, which is fine. But yeah, she just got that
just
face that, like, you know, fuck you, fat boy. I'm no.
You go out in this weather.
yeah. You go shit in the backyard in the rain. I'm staying put. It's nice and warm in here. I'm good. I'm on the couch. I'm happy.
Oh, the animals. They're great.
They're great company. They are so much better than people. I have to say, so much better than people.
I love our snakes. I do. On the when we feed them, and then we don't hold them for a day and a half after we feed them. Mm-hmm. I just miss them so much. I'm like, we have to start staggering out the feeding, so that I can still get my. You know, snake time there, and you know, we try to spend like an hour with each one a night, and you know, the more we get, the longer that takes up.
the long winter evenings must just fly by at your house.
I have we have the new boy, and I usually spend like a half hour with him, and then I give him to the boyfriend, and we, you know, break him up, and then the next one I have an hour for, and so yeah, it makes it, I don't know if it's therapeutic or what, but they're just so chill and most of the time. Anyway.
Oh, absolutely, they are. I miss, again, with having the dogs, I miss being able to, you know, just playing with the snakes and what have you, but have the dogs, you know, and they cuddle up to you, and they, You know, but just that hope, that unconditional love that you get from a dog is just a thing of beauty. It really is. And they absolutely they were. I mean, seeing my daughter with her dog, and my son with his dog specifically, you know, and just seeing the bonds that they have, it's just there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
You know, just the way they look at the kids is just like absolutely. Yeah, they would die for them. You know that. They would absolutely die for them. And that is such a wonderful thing. You know, they will never meet a person in their entire lives that will ever look at them like that, ever. I guarantee it.
That's so sad.
No, it's true. No, I'm not. That's not really slight against people. That's really dogs.
Yeah.
You know, they're just so unconditionally affectionate. Well, unlike cats. Cats are just, not bothered. Yeah. Feed me and I'll tolerate you. But so anywho, what have we got coming up next, Christina?
Yeah, I'm excited. Our second guest of the evening.
Yeah. Let's introduce him straight. Get him out of the green room straight away. So go on, do your stuff.
All right, our second guest of the evening is horror author and owner of Godless, Drew Stepik. Woo!
Hello.
Hey, everybody. How's everyone doing tonight?
Do you know, we're good. We were miserable before we got going, but we're happy now. So how are you? How are you doing?
I'm just, I'm kind of bushed, right? I'm just kind of tired, so I'll pep up. Don't worry. You know, I'll get on it.
We will do our best to keep you awake.
I'm gonna go do a couple bumps of coke, and I should be all set, so...
Woo! Yeah.
Excellent. I tried coke once, but I found the bubbles sort of irritated my nose. But
strangely enough, I used to do it quite a lot. Just real quick, I used to do it quite a lot, and I'm allergic to it, so I would get
seriously?
This gnarly reaction in my nose, and it would totally F me up. I'm allergic to booze too, so that's but that doesn't stop me from drinking.
Oh, but awful. I commiserations. I would be I would be a lot lost without the odd beer or two,
Speaking of Coke,
exactly.
Coca-Cola, but has anybody tried the new flavor of Coke, the Starlight?
No.
They have some new flavor of Coke?
I have no idea what it is.
From New Coke?
Yes, it's called Starlight, and they say it's supposed to taste like space. Or something. Okay, and I have had it, and I like it. It kind of has an almost cotton candy flavor, but kind of subtle. It's really good. It's really good. You should try it. But yeah, it's called Starlight.
No one can hear you drink in space.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, who the hell knows what space tastes like? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I don't know. It tastes like unicorns. Unicorns and cotton candy. That's what it is.
Well, I remember same sort of idea. I mean, many, many years ago, we had a boxer dog, and he was coprophagic. And people said, it's a nasty habit because he'd eat his poo, he'd eat it, and then come and try and give you a kiss, which is just horrible, all around his mouth. So, and I read up on it, and they said, well, if you feed him pineapple, it'll make his poo taste nasty. I mean, a couple of questions, really. I mean, how much more nasty do you need shit to taste? And who the hell found that out, really? Who found out?
Oh,
I fed my dog pineapple,
so
and by crap, his droppings taste horrible. You know, I'm not eating them again.
That's
one of those things.
That's the job of a certain veterinarian whose job is only to eat dog shit and figure out what tastes nasty.
Oh man!
The next question is: I mean, what is the pay for that job? You know, it would need to pay rather well, I think.
It's a job for a veterinary approved fetishists who want
exactly. And I think you could move on from that job to a job at Taco Bell, probably.
Exactly. Eating the dog poop would probably be better for your stomach than actually eating Taco Bell or Chipotle, or a combination of both.
Yeah. Oh God, no. That would be just devastating. Devastating. But anyway,
the death,
so we,
the death
we, all,
meal,
we always
the,
end up
the combination.
Mm-hmm. We always end up talking about poo at some point or other, which is just, you know, we should know, but we're grown adults, we should know better, but we don't, so so there's that. But so Drew, I'm going to have to ask you, Godless, how is that going?
Yeah, it's going great. It's just exhausting because it's just me. You know what I mean?
Oh, really? So do we do it? Just explain to our listeners what Godless is all about.
Godless is a independent horror, an independent fiction actually in literature distribution platform, and it's also a social amplification platform. So the kind of methodology behind it is, if you take a bunch of micro influencers, which you know all these horror authors and publishers are micro influencers in their own right. Who kind of like promote themselves, and you bring them all together, and then you've got one big voice that you can push out the message, and everyone can support each other, you know, and help each other out, and make a bigger sting on the community that way. And that's kind of the principle behind it. But, you know, it's like anything like this that's kind of different. And people don't really understand the need for it because, you know, people are like, I'm in KDP. Why do I need to do that, right? It's like, well, you're also signing over your IP to a fucking company. So it's like, get your head out of your ass and try and do something for yourself. So it's the name Godless kind of comes from a point of view that you should be your own god. And you should mm-hmm. take your own creative and your own IP into your own hands and really push it out yourselves rather than relying on a company like Amazon to kind of, you know, they for the most part, when you go into an exclusive contract with them, your IP becomes part of their company. And that's not what Godless is about, man. What I'm about, because I'm a horror author as well, an indie horror author, is I'm about self-promotion and building yourself up and making something of yourself without the help of the luxuries and the, you know, the chains of DRM and exclusivity to a platform. I mean, I'm not saying that authors don't come to me and publishers and give me exclusive work. I totally appreciate that, and I think it's awesome. But, you know, at Godless, they're making 90% royalties. And at Amazon, it's they make, like, you know, what, between, like, 20 and 60 max. It's, like, it's ridiculous. And, I don't want to rag on Amazon. I've got books that are spoken for by publishers that are definitely distributed through Amazon. And, you know, it's a great resource to get things off. But at the end of the day, it's a locked corporate, you know, ecosystem. And we're approaching it in a way that's punk rock, and it feels natural to, you know, indie horror, which is something that is the most independent thing in the world. It's got to have an edge. As soon as you get Amazon stamped on your book and you release it through Amazon, it's automatically not punk rock. You know, it's corporate, and it's owned by them. And I wish a lot more people would understand that when you go into an exclusive contract with KDP, essentially you can't take that anywhere else, which means that Amazon owns part of that IP. And I think everyone should own and, you know, nurture their own intellectual properties and creative and use different resources such as Godless. There are other things springing up that are similar to it to organically get their messages out and organically show people they're creative. And at the end of the day, we're the only, like, you know, laser targeted platform in town, right? We speak directly to the audience. You're going to get a promotion from us, which, you know, I'm releasing multiple books a day, which is, you know, why I'm so exhausted. But it's like That's what we have to do. And we have to honestly and sincerely come together as a community, or this goes away. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know that's a really dour approach,
yeah.
and to even say that. But it's like, if we don't support each other, and we don't support the community, and we don't look out for each other, and we don't build an audience, all this was done for no reason, right? It's like, just didn't go to KDP, man. You know? Go mm-hmm. be a part of a corporate ecosystem where you're never, ever, ever going to get the visibility you're going to get through a targeted platform.
I do like what you said
I was just going to say that I know that was a little dry and a little sterile, and it seemed like it was really corporate speak. But, you know, I've been begging people for months to please participate, because that is the only way this survives, is through unification. And without unification and the supporting your brothers and sisters within the community, it's just like, you know, taking a shit in the street and leaving it, because it goes nowhere without everyone looking out for each other.
I do love that idea that, you know, come together. And I do see a lot of support in the horror community, as opposed to like the romance community or something like that. I do see very, you know, united. And I do think that's, I love that. I do. I think that the horror authors are not as, I don't think they're as competitive, because I do think they understand where everyone else is coming from. You know, it's, I think there's like a stigma when it comes to horror. People kind of almost look down upon, which is just crazy. But I mean, I do feel it as well. Like, what do you read? I read horror. She's one of those.
Yeah.
It's like
an automatic gas face, right? It's like, why are you giving
yeah.
me the gas face, dude? It's what I like. And the most breakthrough and visionary minds right now in creative and writing are coming from the horror community. And just because people don't really see it, because platforms such as Amazon really bury the work. So, it's almost impossible for voices like Simon McCarty and Sean Hawker and, you know, I'm not going to say Aaron Beauregard. We all know that he has done a really good job at kind of building his own brand. But a lot of these people, especially the younger people like, you know, RJ Benetti and a couple of people like that, they can't project their vision and their creative because they get buried. And
yeah.
that's kind of where the platform came from, and the name Godless. You know, it's like, we want to broadcast this talent and say, you know what, dude, if you like this, you're going to love this. And you know what?
Yeah.
This is very subversive. A lot of this has been censored from Amazon. So give it a chance, and maybe you'll find something that you really dig. And of course, much to my delight, this has grown like beyond anything I would have imagined. Next week is the 1 year anniversary of Godless being an independent horror distribution platform. And yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I can't even believe it. Like, I can't even believe how far it's come, you know. And I have to say that's all because of the incredible authors and the incredible independent publishers and the fans and obviously the readers who've made this happen, right? You take something that before launch, people are like, what the fuck is this, and why are you releasing it, and why are you putting this out, and why are you talking about this, to something that people understand and recognize now just by seeing the pentagram, right? They know what it is now, and it's like it's a true showing of how unification can work, even in a community like a literature community, where you know, like you just said, it's always going to be very competitive. Everyone thinks mm-hmm. they're better than the other guy, you know. But
yeah.
I think that to some extent we've managed to really calm egos, because people understand that We all have the same goal here. And the goal isn't to sell out and become mainstream. The goal is to cross over and introduce people to these voices that we think are really important. And they're not going to find them anywhere else because brands like Amazon are going to bury them.
Yeah, I remember when I just read mainstream, and I don't even think I knew that indie existed. This was years ago. And when I stumbled upon some indie, I was like, it was a whole new world that opened up, and it was amazing. It really was. And I definitely think that, especially for people who don't read indie, they don't know what they're missing. I mean, in the past couple of years, I've tried some of the more mainstream. I went to thrillers for a while. I really, you know, love thrillers. But they were just, it's so followed a formula, and I could guess what was going on. And you know what? I don't get that ever when I'm reading the indie book. I'm like, there's such, you know, individual, unique books. And I just, part of me is like, how come the mainstream, you know, the big publishers, how come they don't take a look at some of these books that the indies are putting out that is just amazing? And I don't know.
I think there is this kind of sense of the mainstream publishers going the way of the big record companies before digital took over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they're really shaken up by it. But just like the big record companies who didn't embrace the technology, and then all these independent record labels sprouted up and kind of started running digital, right? The same thing's going on in publishing. And they continue to turn their backs on it because they don't understand why indie is popular as it is. They look at their bubblegum product, and, you know, obviously I'm not saying that Clive Barker's bubblegum. Don't get me wrong. I don't mean that. I said they look at their bubblegum product, which is their mainstream, you know, made for the bookshelves of Barnes & Noble product, and they say, this is what's going to sell. This is what we know is going to sell, right? And there's all these independents around it. It's like the difference of, like, you know, listening to, like, Sum 41 versus Leftover Crack, right? It's like, okay, Sum 41 is this fucking poser pop band, and they got, like, colored hair. They think they're fucking punk rock, and you're being told they're punk rock. And, you know, there is some real stuff out there that's really hard. And the second you hear the real, authentic punk rock, you're like, why was I listening to that ridiculous Machine Gun Kelly pop punk album? That's the difference between mainstream and indie, is because indie's got edge, and mainstream publishers and the mainstream audience is afraid of that because they don't really want to get into it, and they just don't want to try it. You know, it's like being forced at it. It's the same reason why people are so locked into their Kindle devices and their Kindle ebooks. The Kindle freaking rendering system on their absolutely awful, awful proprietary ebook format is just a pile of garbage compared to, like, you know, the international standard, which is EPUB 3. It doesn't make any sense. And I get complaints constantly about why this is so difficult for me to take 1 minute to send this, you know, this Mobi file from Godless to my Kindle. And it's like, why didn't you just not use their very shitty app and use the standard, you know, Android ebook, it's called Google Play Books, or Apple Books, which have the best rendering of ebooks, like, in the world. It's like, why didn't you just use that? It's because I want my freaking Kindle ebook shell to look cool. Eat shit, man. It's so bogus, and it's so phony, and it's so locked into stuff. Like when I first launched Godless, it was like, you know, I launched with this big title, which was the audio book of my sequel to Knuckle Supper. It's this book called Knuckleballed, and I released that on the first day of Godless's release last year. And I can't even tell you how many emails I got that day of people who did not know how to open an MP3 file on their phone or their computer. It's because they're so used to the laziness of proprietary platforms like Audible and you know, the Kindle bookstore and things like that, that they just don't care enough, and they don't want to spend the time to read something that's subversive and edgy because they don't care enough about it. They just want to read whatever's free on KDP, right? It's like, all right, man, you're missing the boat.
I prefer a good old paperback, to be honest. I mean, I do have the Kindle app on my phone. But, yeah, I want the paperback. I do. I want to hold it. I want to smell the pages. I want to hear them turn. Although I have to say, when I'm in bed reading at night and I have a hardcover and I go to fall asleep and it hits me on the head, that hurts a little more than when my phone hits me in the head. So there is that. But
let me ask you a question. Do you still get DVDs by mail, and do you still buy CDs?
I don't. No.
Yeah.
That wasn't
a pointed question. I am just kind of making a point that, like, We have to really start embracing the print books as collectibles more now, and I think that's a good way, because you're not going to get enough of this indie work that's so great through just through print, and I'm not knocking print. I just came out with a print book for 2 weeks ago, right? You know, it's just like at some point as readers in the community, we really have to start embracing technology going this way, because as the publishers become more and more drastic because, you know, of the power of independence, It's just gonna eventually kind of fade away, and I'm not saying that conventions are gonna go away, and I'm not saying that print's ever gonna go away. It's probably not, but if you want to read a book the day it comes out, why don't you just buy the digital version of it, and then when you get the print book in the mail 2 or 3 days later, hold on to that and don't get your grubby ass fingers all over it, and take that to a convention when they reopen and get it signed by the author. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I love my signed books, definitely. And before we do run out of time here, we want to talk to you about your book, Call Me Hoop. And I just love the tagline, "The devil knows your name, learn his." That's really creepy, by the way. So, tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, it was actually this book birthed the Godless platform, and it was a series that I created with Bloodbound Books. It was called Fucking Scumbags Burn in Hell, and essentially what it was all these stories about these, like, topical characters. They're novelettes, and I wanted to sell them for 25 cents, and Mark Ciccaroni at Bloodbound said, "Dude, we can't sell them for Amazon for 25 cents." And so I'm like, okay, then I'm going to start a platform where I can sell books for that cheap. And that's kind of how that happened. So after I launched Godless, I decided that I didn't have enough time to write all these books. There's supposed to be 10 in the first season, which it is 10 now. It actually tried to be 12. So I enlisted a bunch of other authors from the community, Lucy Leitner, John Shupak, Lucas Milliron. We have an emerging author named Lucas Kelly. What am I saying? Lewis Kelly. We have another author, Peter Caffrey. We have one named Danny Brown, the Queen of Filth, and Ryan Harding, who is our ringer for season one. And essentially, I gave them the formula for this kind of like anthology series that I said that we were going to run like a television show. So I created the universe. I kind of created the formula for how the universe works. And then they write stories about topical characters almost entirely from the first person point of view, where they encounter the devil and they fall into his trap. And so we finished the first season in December with Ryan Harding's book. And then we just came out with the print anthology of the entire first season, which is called Call Me Hoop. And I wrote like an epilogue that leads into season two. And season two of Fucking Scumbags, which is called Fucking Scumbags Burn in Hell Again, is starting on July 15th. And it's one of the many like exclusive and kind of unique series that we're doing on Godless. Like, we got Fucking Scumbags Burn in Hell. We've got the Godless League. We've got another one coming out called Mad Motherfuckers. And, you know, and authors and publishers are coming to me with different kinds of exclusive series. I'm launching one this month from Chris Miller that's called Merchant. It's a noir horror series. It's going to be bi-monthly. And I'm launching another one by Mike Duke, who is releasing a series with me called MD 2021. And, or
we've had both of them on the show before. We love those guys. Yeah, I am fascinated.
They're totally awesome.
I think it'd be really fun to get like a group of guys from Godless and do like a show just you guys I'm fascinated. Yeah, I think we should do this.
Yeah, I'm into it. You know, I like the support. We just announced the second season squad for Fucking Scumbag season two. It's me, Lucy again, Lucas Milliron again, John Shupek again, Peter Caffrey again, Danny Brown again. Then there's Nick Robinson. I don't know if you know him. Nicholas Robinson. Mm-hmm. Our emerging author this season is going to be Nat Wiston. And we also brought in the professor. I don't know if you know who he is. He does an original series on Godless too. He's rad as F. And our ringer for season two is going to be our good friend K. Trap Jones, who is one of the runners of the Splatter Club. So that's
wow.
Our season two lineup. And we're also bringing a new.
Awesome.
We're also going to bring this summer. We're going to bring a new member into the Godless League, which, if you don't know what the Godless League is, it's a like hyper-violent superhero series, and that currently is myself, Lucy Leitner, and John Baltusberger, who's the owner of Madness Art Press, and we're bringing in a new member to the Godless League team this summer, and. There you have it. I'm trying to work with as many people within the community who want to participate in these type of things, but it's kind of hard to really recruit someone to write into to my universe or John Baltusberger's universe. You know what I mean? So it's a big ask from people, but I think that when people start to read these stories and they get into the series as we drop them monthly, they really kind of find out what this is and what it means and how it's a different direction for indie horror. To do something, it's like, okay, we want to do something that's like a TV series, but these are book series, you know? So it's super cool, and I've had the blast. I have never, ever in my life done a collaboration before this year or last year, and now it's all I want to do. I'll probably never get the third Knuckle Supper book done because I'm just doing this constantly.
Well, I hate to do this, but we are just about out of time for our show, Drew. And I thank you so much for coming on. Real fast, give us a plug where we can find you online, just the website.
Go obviously check out godless.com, godless.net. You can download the Godless app in the Apple App Store and in the Android Google Play Store. That's
awesome.
What I got, and my plug is obviously Call Me Hoop. It's available everywhere, and I think that you guys will really, really, really get a kick out of it because it is the most unique thing that I've ever worked on, and I think it's the most unique anthology in horror today.
Awesome. We will definitely check it out. Thank you so much,
Absolutely.
Drew. And Yes, I can't wait to have you back. Thank you.
Awesome. I can't wait to come back here. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Have a great rest of your evening.
Awesome. You guys too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we need to make it happen. We need a whole show with just Drew and a bunch of his authors. I mean, obviously, he's mentioned a bunch there that we've had on before, so it'd be great to get them all together and give Godless a good... I love the message. I think, you know, it's something that is needed in the community, so make it happen.
Yes, sir.
Make it happen. You know, you're the gaffer. I'm just, you know, I just turn up once a week and that's that. But it is unfortunately, time to say good night, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Oh yeah, I'm the pretender. One can tell. Oh yeah, I'm the great pretender.
Like a cloud.